if I recall correctly, the observation by one delegate that democracy was breaking out all over and that they had come to Philadelphia to stop that. In other words, the Constitution of the United States is best understood as a document that was created to quell democratic urges, not enshrine them. And man, doesn't that say something? It says a lot. Thank you very much. Contribution just rolled in sufficient to lower our fundraising goal for this evening to $510. Thank you. Thank you very kindly. A program note, going forward, we will have a regular week up through Thursday. We will have shows Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week. Friday, I go to Boston. Am I saying it right? Boston? No, I'm going to Boston on Friday, and I will be gone, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and then Monday evening we fly to Charlotte, and then Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday in Charlotte, and then Wednesday evening I fly back here to wild, wonderful, almost level West Virginia. So it's going to be a little bit busy. But there are, I'm going to be at two speaking engagements in Boston, one in Cambridge and one in Sudbury. I hope I'm saying that correctly. I'm quite certain of it. One in Cambridge, one in Sudbury. And we will be talking about the horrors of mountaintop removal and the financing thereof. So if you can come out, I would love to have a chance to meet folks who are in the Boston area and in the Horn family. I got a note from our good buddy Patrick, who said he'll try to come to the Sudbury event. I think our chat room moderator, I'm going to get to finally meet our chat room moderator Lottie for the first time, which is going to be exciting. I think he's going to try to make it to the Cambridge event. Let's see here. Let me look around here and I'll tell you just exactly where in Sudbury and just exactly where in Cambridge. On Saturday, from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m., a number of us will be speaking at Memorial Congregational Church. That's at 26 Concord Road in Sudbury, Massachusetts. There's a Facebook page. And then on Sunday, May the 6th, from 3 to 5 p.m., First Parish in Cambridge at 3 Church Street in Cambridge, Massachusetts, near the Harvard T-stop. And then Monday we're going to be doing some Bank of America stuff. In Charlotte, in particular, we will be going to the shareholder meeting of Bank of America. And there will also be a big rally and alternative summit in Charlotte at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, May the 8th. So you can see it's going to be rather of a busy time. Between Friday and Wednesday, but that's. I think you'll learn a lot if you come out, if you're anywhere nearby, and you won't just learn a lot. I think you'll be energized to take steps forward. Yeah, Marty, I can dig that. I understand. Boston's a bit of a drive from Sacramento, and yeah, I sure. But you know what? We get anywhere near Sacramento, I know you'll be there. I just do. Don't know how much time there's going to be for sightseeing. There seldom is on these kind of trips, but I'm going to try to see a couple of the more noteworthies in Boston. I've been waiting since childhood to see that city. See, I was raised to think that the North was in the right, even though I was being raised in Alabama. It caused no small amount of friction. Because it, I'm not going to go into the story. You don't want to hear it. But I was, and I was absolutely fascinated when I read that the rednecks, you know, the ignorant, the dirt eaters and well, booger eaters and, you know, pro-slavery people. I was fascinated when I read that, because even a child's mind can understand you can't do this, that the Southerners had suggested, because that Massachusetts is such a hotbed of abolitionist insurrection trying to step on our property rights to own other people like it says we're supposed to in the Bible. The dumbasses wanted to dig a ditch around Massachusetts and float it out to sea. You understand now why the South lost the Civil War. Right. But no, that's where we're headed, beginning Friday and home on Wednesday. Whew. Road trip. And I will be very kind to my innards during all of the above. Don't care about the George Clooney contest. Sorry. So where do we go this evening? It is, after all, yeah, you know it. I said it early on. No getting around it. Wait, too early. Too early. I'm getting ahead of myself. No, I wanted to make sure we hit some email. Oh, wow, thanks. Thanks very kindly. We are now $490 away from making April's fundraising goal. That's inspiring. Sure would be nice to make Scott pony up on the Beat This Week challenge. We'll see. Some stranger things have happened. Speaking of Scott, I have a letter from him here from Friday that I wanted to get to but didn't. And it deserves our attention because it is an underreported story here in the United States, and I want to do what little bit I can to reverse that trend. You know, Anders Breivik, the right-wing ass who shot up a bunch of Norwegian children and murdered them, is on trial. Being Norway, he is not on trial for his life, but he will spend a great deal of time in prison, hopefully. Scott notes, he says, "Hey, Bob or Rebob." I kind of like that. "I hope you're feeling better now, and I have been a bit worried about you." I am feeling better now, and on Wednesday, I'll find out about what it is that what it's going to cost me to get this little Republican removed from my gut. He says, "I have some news from Norway that I'm sure will lift all of our spirits. In my last letter, I pointed out how much of a fascist, in the technical sense, Anders Breivik is, and how he is sure he has won because he decapitated the ranks of Norwegian Social Democratic Party's young up-and-coming leaders. Although one thing Breivik never imagined was that youth would flock to all the political parties' youth sections in protest and to get more involved in their own democracy and future. By cutting off the head of the Hydra, he now gets to watch new heads multiply." It is, after all, Moran Monday, so talking about, even though he's homicidal, he is still a moran, Anders Breivik. A Christian murderer, Anders Breivik. Anders Breivik has been a right smug bastard all through the trial, smirking and giving a modified Hitler salute when the cameras are on him. As he enters for the day, he pounds his chest with his fist and then raises that fist in front of him. One of his many snarky comments was how Norwegian kids are indoctrinated by Marxism in the daycare centers where, since the 1970s, they've been forced to learn that the Pete Seeger song, they've been forced to learn the Pete Seeger song Barn av Regnbuen, Barn av Regnbuen, Children of the Rainbow, I'm guessing Regnbuen is rainbow, with the Norwegian lyrics by Lillebjørn Nilsen. Two Norwegian women contacted Nilsen, who called his old buddy Pete Seeger to tell him that the song is part of the recovery movement in Norway, and via social media got the word out to gather in the main square closest to the courtroom to sing the song. Oh, this is beautiful. They were hoping for 30 or 40 friends to show up. Instead, a few days later, over 40,000 people showed up in the rain and, holding up umbrellas and roses, peacefully sang the song for 8 minutes. In solidarity, crowds gathered in the main square of 15 other Norwegian cities to sing the same song. The song was also sung in public by crowds in Iceland. Please see the below link where you can find a video and audio, hint, hint, to see and hear the crowd in Oslo. Time and again, the Norwegians are meeting hatred with love and swamping the hatred. In any case, I added my real tears of joy when I watched and listened to the video. Brevik is a one-man Fox News Rush Limbaugh Glenn Beck ad nauseam, and the Norwegians are gently and proudly defying his worldview by not taking the bait. One short paragraph from the article linked below really sums up what solidarity is all about, says Scott. There were a few short introductory speeches before the singing began, with the head of a group representing survivors of the attacks. Trond Blatman, thanking everyone for coming to show their sympathy and support as the difficult terror trial ended its second of ten weeks. Eskil Pedersen, head of the labor youth group AIJF that Brevik attacked on the island of Utøya, killing 69 of his colleagues, claimed that we are gathered not because of him, but because of each other. I read that, and I wanted to make sure that I did share it with you, because that is simply beautiful. ...40,000 people singing a song sung by children to a Christian Nazi filled by hate.
Are they glad?
Det er veldig fin gammel mann. Han er 93 år og fin singer. Han tok telefonen hjemme i Beacon i New York. Måtte skru litt på høreapparatet for han forstod at det var jeg som ringte. Men han oppfattet det, så sa han, ha nei, snille bjørn. Når jeg fortalte om dette arrangementet, så hører jeg gamle tidsinger si, oh me, oh my, I wish you luck. Så derfor har jeg veldig lyst til å nevne tidsinger, og at det er han som har skrevet denne sangen. Det har vært vanskelig for meg å få det inn. Alle tror at det er jeg som har skrevet den. Men jeg fikk litt drahjelp av Bruce Springsteen. Han ga ut The Singer Sessions. Da var det noen flere som hadde hørt om Pete Seeger. Så hvis dere kan synge One blue sky above us, one ocean lapping all our shores, one ocean lapping all our shores, one earth so green and round,
one earth so green and round.
Who could ask for more? One blue sky above us, one ocean lapping on our shore, one earth so green and brown. Who could ask for more? And because I love you, I'll give it one more try to show my rainbow rays. It's too soon to die. Some folks want to be like an ostrich, bury their heads in the sand. Some think that plastic dreams can uncontrol them with greedy hands. Some folks want to take the easy way, poison bombs, they think we need them. Don't you know you can't kill all the unbelievers? There's no shortcut to freedom. One blue sky, one ocean, nothing on us, one earth, so green and round. Who could ask for more? And because I love you, I'll give it one more try to show my rainbow rays. It's too soon to die. Go tell all the children, tell all the mothers and fathers too. This is our last chance to learn to share what's been given to me and you. One blue sky above, one ocean laughing all our shore, one earth so green and round. Who could ask for more? And because I love you, I'll give it one more try to show my rainbow rays. It's too soon to die.
beautiful moment, worth every second of it. And somewhere in one of those buildings that fronts that square, Anders Breivik, a Christian murderer, a Christian Nazi murderer, had to listen. He couldn't escape it. 40,000 people rejecting his Nazi Christian hatred. In the gentlest way possible. And in fact, the lyrics to that song, you heard interspersed amongst the Norwegian, you heard Pete Seeger. It's a Pete Seeger song, as Scott's note pointed out. Daggum if those lyrics aren't more Christian than anything Anders Breivik ever considered. And that lyric, of course, who could ask, you know, one blue sky above us, one ocean lapping at our shores. Who could ask for anything more? Well, let me answer that real quick, because it is more in Monday. And, you know, the more ends you have always with you. Yes, yes indeed. Step right up, hurry, hurry, hurry. Look behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas and you will see morons of all ages, all sizes, all genders, all nationalities. Freaks, every last one of them. Hurry, 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 get your program. You can't tell the morons without a program, but this is the program that can tell the morons. You just can't tell them much. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Ladies are advised not to set their purses down, and no one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. Uh-oh, it's 30 minutes past the hour. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in morons. That's right, it's Moran Monday. That's the lyric to that song. Who could ask for anything more? Well, we know the answer to that. Willard Romney. Willard Romney went to a $25,000 donation, highfalutin private fundraiser at the home of pizza magnate, Papa John's pizza magnate, I'll never eat another one, John Schnatter. No, really. John Schnatter recently. And speaking there, and why should I, I'm not just going to read this thing to you. We'll let Willard do it in his own voice because, well, I might get the galloping vomits if I said these things myself. Well, just check it out. Here he is.
What a welcome. What a place this is.
Ah.
My goodness. Who would have imagined pizza could build this? You know what? This is really something. Don't you love this country? What a home this is. What grounds these are. The pool. The golf course. You know, if a Democrat were here, he'd look around and say, no one should live like this. You know? Republicans come here and say, everyone should live like this, all right? This is a real tribute to America, to entrepreneurship.
Yeah, sure, Willard. There's only one problem with living like that. The only way that ever... Well, see, this is in direct counterpoint to the lovely lyrics of Pete Seeger's song. Because, see, if you live on a planet that is, in fact, a closed system, because asteroid mining notwithstanding, no one's figured out how to get off the rock yet and stay off, though we wish Willard would. If everybody lived like John Schnatter, the whole world would collapse. But it's actually physically impossible for everyone, to live like John Schnatter. He's there in Anchorage, Kentucky, John Schnatter is. Because in order to live like John Schnatter, you have to exploit a whole boatload of other human beings. I'm sure John Schnatter likes to consider himself a job creator, But when you're working for $7 and change an hour, plus, I don't know, do they do delivery? Yeah, Papa John's delivery. And you've got to cover your own insurance, and you've got to provide your own vehicle. Well, that ain't much of a job you've created, but the vast majority of the money that is collected, one pizza at a time, well, that built John Schnatter's fabulous mansion estate with a pool and a golf course. A river of beer flowing over your grandmother's paisley shawl. Upstairs and down, you might remember from Friday night, right? A man comes down from the bar, he says, sign here. Ignorant statements like Willard's just go to prove that they have no conception whatsoever of the world on which they live. You know, we can have it all. We can take every last bit of it, and we can all be this rich if we's just Republicans. But we can't. Every brick in John Schnatter's mansion has some degree of blood, some degree of agony, some degree of misery, some degree of fear. If there was anything to that whole extra-dimensional ghosty-toasty business, that place would be so haunted you couldn't get on the ground. Yeah, you're right, Marty. Bugs did pronounce it maroon. What a maroon. Michael noting, Michael who got chills listening to the song from the square in Norway. Michael said, I never liked Papa John's. It tastes, he said, subject line, Schnatter. I never liked Papa John's. It tastes like schnott. Last time I ate one, I was in the Schnatter for half an hour. He'll be here till Thursday. Try the veal. But what a perfect counterpoint. We want everyone to live like this. Well, who's everyone going to exploit? Or is it just some sort of massive worldwide globe? Well, what do you think the people on them other continents are for? Another Michael writing in. Subject line, because of each other. That and this is beautiful, he said, referring to the song. Pete Seeger will live forever. And there's a website out there, Michael points out, NobelPrizeForPete.org. I like the idea. Patty says, it's a very, very sweet video. She said, I watched the video the other day. My neighbors here in North Dakota told me about it, my right-wing ones. They're from Norway, and I think this might have fixed them a bit. And Patty says, it's just beautiful. Send my thanks, and thanks for playing it. Hugs and love. Right back at you, Patty. Right back at you. Clayton's saying, stop it. A redneck is a mine worker who wore red scarves that bled red on the neck, which indicates one is a worker. That's one origin. Other origins of redneck have to do with working in the hot southern sun. There's not one origin to redneck. And Marty, yeah, I heard Alan West is a near automatic Moran Monday nominee every time he opens his mouth, and that's true. That is absolutely true. But, Lord, they are queued up in front of us for Moran Monday. I mean, they're it's like something from the Charge of the Light Brigade. You know, Morans to the left of me, Morans to the right. Onward we charged. Early nominee for Moran, because I kind of sat on this story and held it, because it's such a delightful moment in Moranity. The coin and the Duke of Edinburgh. this going back to last week on the 25th of April. Braved heavy rain and driving winds. Braved. Really, braved. Onward she rode, despite the rain, despite the dampness of the streets. Onward she onward rode, the Queen of England. The news report stating the royal couple traveled to the East London dock. All the way to East London? Oh, the bravery! Where she would name a spectacular barge built to mark her jubilee. Excuse me, and I will take correction on this, but doesn't the meaning of jubilee indicate a general forgiveness of debt? No, not that kind of jubilee. This is a Nibs's jubilee. Not forgiving any debts. Just running up the tab a bit, you know? The royal couple traveled to the East London dock, where Gloriana is currently moored, awaiting the moment when it will make its way to Wandsworth Bridge on the Thames, from where it will lead the Jubilee pageant on 3 June. Dressed in a bright red coat and hat that cut a swathe, that's a swathe with an E, a swathe through the morning's gloom, the monarch descended a gangway at Greenland Pier without breaking a hip, on the Thames in London's Docklands, bravely boarding the Gloriana. You should see the Gloriana. It's this big gilded thing that is actually crewed by oarsmen and would look positively magnificent. Well, you know what it looked, you know what it reminded me of the first minute I saw it? If you've ever seen The Lion in Winter, when Eleanor of Aquitaine comes to Chinon to celebrate Christmas, the Christmas court at Chinon, she's riding on a barge. Yeah, one of those, with oarsmen. Strout, you bonny sods, or I'll beat the hide off your backs! Although the Queen was warmly dressed in her deep red coat and hat, the Duke was bareheaded and seemed conscious of the weather. Well, I guess we're lucky he's conscious at all, aren't we? At one point, he could be heard advising the Queen to keep under cover after she had been to inspect the stern of the boat, which bears royal symbols and the vessel's name. You should see this thing. It's got gold paint all over it. It must have cost a fortune. 18 oarsmen will crew it. It is designed based upon boats from Canaletto's famous 18th century painting of a Thames pageant. It incorporates sweet chestnut wood taken from the Duchy of Cornwall estate. It is the vessel is 94 feet length. And meanwhile, otherwhere in the UK, people are suffering under the lash of her government's austerity programs. Austerity? Are the serfs having to tighten their belts a bit? Well, good. They were getting a bit... They're getting a bit fleshy about the middles, I'm afraid. This is the kind of ostentation that makes people sharpen guillotines. I don't know. Maybe after the Jubilee, she and the King of Spain can go rowing off in search of elephants in Mozambique or some such. Morans. Look, just because you're one of the richest people on earth doesn't mean you can't be a moran. Oh, but they love their spectacle. Yeah, I bet they'd love dinner more. It's just saying. Morans everywhere. You know, while children are, as Scott from Sweden noted, while children are swarming to the various political youth wings so as to be active participants in their government, back here in America, well, let's zip over to the Brownsville Area School District in Pennsylvania. Seen this one? The Associated Press reporting. Never mind the Associated Press part. This story began when WTAE reported that a 13-year-old girl had been severely scolded and given a detention for refusing to stand and recite the Pledge of Allegiance. Really, in 2012. Now, Mama didn't much care for it when that happened, but, you know, she went through the proper channels. She complained to school officials, and then she complained to the school district itself, and the school district, given an opportunity to not be morons, chose to be morons instead. The school district upheld the punishment at a full-on school board meeting. Now, this is without regard to the fact that since about 1943, in a case involving the state of West Virginia before the Supreme Court of the United States, it has been the settled law of the land that you may not compel someone to sit or stand or sing or kneel or pray or pledge. You can't do it. The operative quote coming from then Justice Robert Jackson, who went on to serve as, I do believe, the prosecutor at Nuremberg. He wrote in 1943, if there is any fixed star in our constitutional constellation, it is that no official, high or petty, and by God, when we're talking about the Brownsville School Area School District in Pennsylvania, we are talking about petty. No official, high or petty, can prescribe what shall be orthodox in politics, nationalism, religion, or other matters of opinion, or force citizens to confess by word or act their faith therein. That was in 1943, smack dab in the middle of the Second World War. And he did it. He said that in 1943. Can you imagine any member of the Rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, or Scalia, having the kind of courage it takes to say something like that in 2012? Yeah, me neither. And in the Brownsville Area School District, a 13-year-old girl who doesn't want to say the pledge is punished. Now, the funniest part of it all is that the Brownsville Area School District has a solicitor. His name is James Davis. And he said that she had an absolute right to sit silently during the pledge. Uh-oh. I have a feeling the Brownsville Area School District will, with any luck, be paying for the young lady's college. Fascists. Fascists. All over the place. Some places they know better how to deal with them. We never had the Nazis marching through our streets in this country. The Norwegians did. And they are much less likely to let fascism get a foothold than are we. Because the fact of the matter is, fascism in this country has a foothold. Indeed. Indeed. Oh, that's not all for the Morans. We got lots, lots more. But we may as well take a break hereabouts and then come back to your Moran nominations. Not yet. One last thing. I almost forgot some of the biggest Morans. Listen to this. Okay, I'm going to have to read some of this to you. You noticed, heard, whatever. The really scary music. Oh, for pity's sakes. This is too much. It's the election 2012 campaign ad. Well, you can guess. That nasty noise is a hammer hitting molten metal on an anvil, and the music wait, let's get this right. In generations past, the church has always been able to count on the faithful to stand up and protect her sacred rights and duties. The church's sacred rights? Wait, what? The church's sacred rights and duties? Not the people that make it? Oh. This generation of Catholics must do the same. This November, Catholics across the nation will be put to the test. I have a feeling they're going to be shod like horses. Oh, wait, I can turn the reverb off now. I'm not trying to sound like the church. Because there's a guy here, and he's got a forge, and he's got metal stuff in it, and he's beating on it with a hammer, and one of them looks like a horseshoe. Yeah, I think they're going to put horseshoes on the... don't blame me. Many issues in America require hard work. Jobs. Taxes. But how do we know energy if we are building in vain? Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it in labor, build it labor in vain. Catholics across the nation will have an opportunity to share the future. For our generation, oh, here it comes. And generations to come. Many issues are at stake. The economy going into the fire. But some issues are not negotiable. And of course, into the fire goes a big metal thing that says, laugh! The protection of life from conception until natural death. Marriage should be reinforced, not redefined. Freedom into the fire. To be melted down, I guess, by that socialist Obama, that Kenyan, that Muslim, that anti-colonialist, forcing the church to buy insurance that goes against her teachings is a violation of religious freedom. No, it's not. When the government tampers with a freedom so fundamental, one shudders to think what lies ahead. Cardinal Dolan said that, you know, when he wasn't covering up priests who were raping little boys. Your vote will affect the future. And this woman comes out of the voting booth with her eyes, like, all squinty shut, like she's just been in there sort of throwing darts at the ballot and hoping Jesus will take the wheel and take the dart right to whatever Republican she needs, the papacy and the bishops need her to be voting for. And be recorded in eternity. What?! Oh, morons, morons, morons. Okay, back up here. Your vote will... Okay, that's the whole sentence. Your vote will affect the future and be recorded in eternity. God will send you to hell for not voting the right way. Never mind all that. I guess it's unconfessable? Is that what I'm to understand here? This is a full-on attempt at turning this country into the same sad, sorry theocracy that... You know, we denigrate in others. Will you vote the values? Marriage, life, freedom, that will stand the test of fire? Oh, for pity's sakes. Thanks, Maura, for sending that along. Yeah, you're right. You're right. It does. Robert says, sounds like a movie trailer. This November, one man will return, blah, 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 in a time where... Yeah. And it was meant to. Yeah, good question. Is being shot in the head natural death? And of course, is having a million people bombed a natural? No, right, because my conscience that opposes war doesn't count. Only their conscience that worries about blastocysts and zygotes and embryos. That's the conscience that matters, right? Oh, ye generation of vipers. Okay, I wanted to get that last one in. Now we'll take the break. This is Moran Monday. This is The Horn. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. And we're only, I saw it there a minute ago. I hate it when I have to stop and check. But I hate doing bad math on the fly. I just do. There it is. Here we go. Yeah, there it is. Yeah, we are only $490 away. $490 away from meeting April's fundraising goal and triggering the Beat the Sweet effect. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. Thanks very much for all y'all do to keep it all going. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. It's Moran Monday. Your nomination's welcome at 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
A minute and a half past the hour, we are right on schedule, and we will therefore go straight away to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Time to mention the fundraiser.
Oh, yes, indeedy. Yes, indeed.
What's the number they can reach?
877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4. Head on, or 304-658-3333, direct dial. Operators aren't standing by.
And what is the email they can reach if they want to contribute?
Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com.
I think you hit everything. Oh, no, you got to give the address, too.
Oh, you mean 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. Also prominently displayed on the website, headonradionetwork.com, under the tab Contribute.
I think that about covers it.
Okay, great. Hey, David.
Hey. So you brought up the whole thing with Norway, and that just got me thinking because I am a spontaneous type of person. I guess it would be a good time to give away the a Bob Seger documentary if you haven't seen it.
Wait, Bob Seger? Pete Seger?
Pete Seger, excuse me.
Yeah, because see, I mean, I don't mean to be an ass or anything, but I won't be giving away any Bob Seger documentaries. Okay, if somebody wrote in and said, I got $10 million here, can you find me a Bob Seger documentary? Well, you and me, we'll get busy. But until then, no, sorry, no Bob Seger documentaries.
Right. That's almost like giving away the...
On a long, lonely road east to Omaha. No, sorry.
Like giving the Kelsey Grammer documentary.
Nope, that neither.
Okay, so, yes, Pete Seeger documentary. If you haven't seen it, I've suggested it a few times on this program already. And so if you want to see an enlightening documentary with amazing footage and
have a copy that you can keep.
Yes, and a copy you can keep.
And show to your friends.
Be the first one to message Bob with the title Rainbow Race.
Rainbow Race.
Rainbow Race. The first person with a Rainbow Race gets it. And now I think I am done for April. I'm done. No more. That's it. I'm closing the shop for April.
Well, I mean, it's good because April's closing shop on us.
Yeah, I know. I won't call you late at night and say, Bob, I got to do one more. Put it up online. No, So I did want to mention, I just found this at the last moment. I think this is completely, appropriate for, a Moran Monday, a traumatic Moran Monday that you just can't believe it's real until you hear it, Bob.
Okay.
You just can't believe it's real. A father is in custody, accused of attempting to sacrifice his own son in a San Diego area cemetery.
No, stop it. What?
He's accused of attempting to sacrifice his own son in San Diego area cemetery.
If they were named Abraham and Isaac, we're going to have a problem, David.
No, but it is it is quite moronic, and it starts with Joseph Ramirez, 30, took his family to Mount Hope Cemetery Saturday around 4:30, and told them his dead grandmother told him to sacrifice the 8-year-old boy. Officers released a report stating Ramirez had brought candles to the cemetery. One of the candles broke, and he used a piece of the broken glass to slash open his son's forearms. Ramirez then slashed his own forearms.
Can we point out that this that you don't do this without a little bit of religion helping you along?
Yeah, this is a bit of religion. This is probably a bit of Joel Osteen, and I forget the Mexican evangelical guy that is really big over Mexico. That's been hopping over. I mean, since the 80s, over in the LA area too. Granberry was visiting. Medical assistant Corey Granberry witnessed the incident and jumped in to help along with her best friend, Jamisha Pyers. So there is a happy ending to the story. They saved the kid.
8 years old.
Can you imagine the trauma that that kid is going to face every night waking up to that bullshit?
Surely to God they won't let the child go home.
I don't think they will do that. I think they'll put him in. He's now at the Children's Hospital for treatment. And Ramirez was booked in the county jail on charges of child abuse and assault with a deadly weapon, as he should be. But I really have to. I like to hear the ending of a story where somebody witnesses something like that, and at the moment you know what you're supposed to do. You don't just sit there and go, "Oh my God, that's shocking."
Yeah, or whip out your cell phone and start videoing it.
Yeah, and then upload it to YouTube or LiveLeak or something, and then everyone says, "Oh my God, that's horrible."
Stop it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's what you should do. That's what you should do in a situation like that. Especially if there's if it's something like that where he just has a piece of glass in his hand, you may get cut. But if it's not like a machine gun or something.
Well, remember though, the folks at the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Congregation, the homicidal right-wing Christian there was well-armed, and they jumped him anyway, and they didn't have gun number one, and they still stopped him.
Mm.
Sometimes it's a matter of...
Sometimes you just have to assess the situation, and I think these two, they deserve a medal, or they deserve something. I don't know what it is they deserve.
I would love to know more background on the sacrificer.
I think we would definitely go down the road of some craziness of religious rituals that we don't want to know about. Or we want to know about, but when we keep reading it, we don't want to know any more about it.
Oh, Jesus.
But again, still, when people were reading this...
What I hate about stories like this is that all the religionists will say, "Well, you see, he was mentally unbalanced." No, he was acting according to the dictates of his faith.
Right. Everyone is damaged in this story. The problem: the mother, the son. The father probably can never look at his son the same way.
No. Well, no. Hopefully, the father never gets to look at the son again.
Yeah.
The son, on the other hand, can look down at his forearms and say, "Huh,
I got through that one.
Everything from here out's downhill."
Yeah.
Everything's gravy after this.
But what a bunch of, I mean, and the whole setting of taking your son to it.
Well, see, yeah, and Ron in Raleigh has a great point, David. He says, Bob, how can we stand by and let the state infringe upon this father's religious rights? What has this Christian nation come to? I mean, where's our respect for that homicidal? Oh, he wasn't homicidal. He was sacrificing the child to God. What about his conscience? I mean, he was acting from his conscience, don't you understand?
Yeah, definitely a conscious act.
And you know, the Bible is the literal truth of the living God, and Abraham went to sacrifice Isaac, and that all worked out okay. There was a ram over in the bushes, and God said, don't do it. And sometimes God doesn't say, don't do it. Sometimes God's down with it. Which reminds me, I don't know if you've seen it or not, but Dark Matter 2525 has a heck of a thing going on YouTube.
Dark Matter
2525. Some brilliant animations, and I guess it was Friday evening, maybe, mm-hmm. that Isaac sent along the link to the Book of Job. And it is brilliant. Because it's pretty much an honest telling of what happens in the Book of Job. And, you know, I'm surprised that the Book of Job actually ever made it into the Bible, because it is a blanket condemnation of religion. But go have a look. I may have to look up the audio and see, look up the video itself and see if I can find it.
I will definitely check that out. And the other story I think that has relevance for definitely for people on the internet. I don't know if you heard this, but the court ruled on Pirate Bay in the UK, and they
got to shut it down.
Right.
All what is it? All ISPs were ordered by the British High Court to eliminate access to Pirate Bay.
They really should change their name, first off. They need to get rid of that pirate ship. Call themselves...
Weren't they just kind of needling?
I think when you put messages, we are matey, we're here to take your booty, or whatever the messages that they were doing at random. It's kind of like the whole thing with... The offshoot of the anonymous hackers, LulzSec, they went down this similar road. I think if you, for the most part, this doesn't, okay, I'll say this, it doesn't happen if something like, I don't know if I want to put the name out of the site, they might bust it or whatever, but it doesn't happen to some of the other torrent sites that just, don't constantly brag about their position. They just say, hey, if you want to join and you want to share files, here you go. And they have like a sort of like a private membership. You have to you have to subscribe to it or whatever. And they open subscriptions like every 5 or 6 months or something like that. And it's pretty much the reverse of something like Pirate Bay, where it's really just out in the open. And they're just really, you know, they're really happy to just put it out there that they are the kings of uploading media, downloading media, all of that. And I think that it really does say something if you just play the background. And they're not really going to go, I don't think they really go after you.
It depends entirely, David, on what kind of day the people out at the Motion Picture Association of America and RIAA are having.
Mm.
But remember, this is the same group that tried to shut down you're a little bit younger. When VCRs came out,
mm-hmm.
The Motion Picture Association of America went to the Supreme Court of the United States saying, oh, no, people can't be allowed to have those things. Why, we won't be eating our lobster lunches anymore. And the Supreme Court said, shut up. And oddly enough, Hollywood is still here and still immensely rich and got richer on the VC, on the videotape market. But they're a very conservative bunch, and they tend toward being a buggy whip industry, constantly afraid of the next, look at the money they're making now off of the sales of videos and so forth and music and whatever for iPods and MP3 players and the like. But, you know, there they were. Oh, we can't have that. We'll go out of business. No, dummy, you're going to make more money than you ever imagined in your life.
Yeah.
You'll have lobster lunches twice a day and three times on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a phase we're all going through with regarding media, and so many people are going to benefit from in the long run.
It's like the one little joke that Jimmy Kimmel told at the nerd prom Saturday night.
Right.
He said, "Hey, I see the print media is here. Hey, I got a question for you. What's black and white and red all over?"
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. So what were your thoughts on the White House Correspondents' Dinner?
It was cute. It's always cute. Jimmy Kimmel, I thought, acquitted himself quite well, really. I had no expectations for him whatsoever.
Right.
But he, you know, he was better than Rich Little was under the Bush administration. And I think that is the low bar over which everybody has to step, you know, in the last, 10 years or so? At Rich Little.
I think what was amazing about all of that is you look at the president, and then compared to the president and Kimmel, it's like the president literally he had the complete sense of cool. He had the timing, everything, and nothing like fazed him. Everything that he read, he was like right on it. Whereas Jimmy Kimmel was nervous every single line.
Jimmy was nervous, but you know there were some nice delivery moments, like Mr. President, cover your ears if that's humanly possible. That and the carrot and stick comment about, you know, Michelle starving him to death was, I thought, quite funny. And the president was funny in his own right. The Donald Trump bit was, you know, just delightful. And the little skewering of Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich. Of course, I think it would have been funnier if he would have referred to him as Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich.
With his big old head, don't forget.
With
that.
His big old head.
Yeah, that's very important. Every time you forget that, you know.
Yeah, the big old head.
Yeah, we need to include that. I just watched the intro, and I watched some of the president's comments, but I really got the feeling like I don't know if I could actually watch the whole entire thing.
I watched both Kimmel's piece and the president's remarks, so
right.
I think it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. It wasn't. It was no. I don't think anything can ever approach Stephen Colbert.
Right. Completely knocked it out of the park in every sense.
Yeah, I mean, that was Babe Ruth calling the shot. It's just not going to be done again.
Just had the most brilliant sense of timing and had the perfect president to skewer, as it were.
Yeah. But all told, it was quite funny. And, you know, like I said, getting a jab, you know, there's never a bad time for a jab in at Donald Trump.
I did kind of wonder at Kimmel's one-term comment to see how ominous that statement is, and to see, you know, the coming months, what we have in store for us if the Romney people can really...
No, you know what the most telling comment out of the whole thing was in the president's remarks, David, when he said, in my first term, we passed historic health care reform.
Right.
In my second term, I guess we'll do it again. That I thought telegraphed a little bit of a message.
Hmm.
Because everybody expects it to be overturned.
Right.
But all in all, it was enjoyable.
Yeah, I seem to think that again, to say what I said last week, everybody needs to get in on voting. We don't need a loss of voter participation.
Oh no!
Young voters in this country and so forth. Just because.
But the answer is not internet voting. Can we be clear on that?
Right. Internet voting is not.
It's great for American Idol, or Dancing with the Has-Beens. but no, not for anything serious. Sorry.
Yeah.
I guess maybe I'm just a cranky old man in that way. I think you need to get off your ass, walk out the door, go somewhere, and cast a ballot.
Oh, wow.
Unless it's a vote by mail setup that's pretty much tried and true, like they've got working in Oregon.
Right. And the whole absentee system, you favor that? You don't?
I'm going to be gone during West Virginia's primary.
Right.
So I'm going to have to go this week. Thanks for reminding me.
Okay.
And early vote, so that I can make sure that I do get my vote in. Absentee ballots are seldom counted until after everything else has been counted, and then in some states, if the margin is not, let's see if I'm explaining this plainly. When all the ballots have been counted from the regular election, if the margins are so large that there's no way that the absentee ballots could change it, they put them in the trash.
Do you think the Democrats are going to take the voter hijinks, especially this year?
We've taken them every other year. I don't see any reason why we'd stop now.
No, to take them more than serious, not just in passing. If someone says, "Well, this is what,"
the problem with voter hijinks is that you can only deal with them after the fact, and the Republicans know that, David.
Right.
There was all of those dirty tricks that were used in New Hampshire, for instance.
Hijinks. Excuse me. There's a difference between that.
Well, pardon?
I meant to say election hijinks. You know how Republicans say voter hijinks?
Oh, yeah. No, I get it. No, the classic case in point is, what was it, 2004, when Gene Shaheen was ripped off in New Hampshire by a full-on, coordinated, felonious, dirty tricks operation run by the Republican National Committee, and everybody knew it. And she lost anyway, and the Republican was seated in the Senate anyway, and a few years later, the dirty bastard went to prison, and a few years later still, Jean Shaheen won election, as she should have beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it was impossible to stop it the day that it happened. And Republicans understand that, and they're willing to pay that price. And that's where it becomes a little bit frightening.
Yeah, it makes me, again, it makes me wonder, even all of the elections that we've won, we talked about this before, even with all the elections that the Democrats and progressives and so forth have won, it makes me wonder how many votes they still...
Oh, yeah, well, 2008 probably should have been an absolute landslide of epic proportions,
right,
but
right.
It was kept respectable.
Yeah, that's the thing that I and you look into the situation with the how much they want to do regarding with the Supreme Court, the House and the Senate, and you just look at all of these different races, and you just think to yourself, how much, how far are they going to push this envelope? I mean, to the point where they just push it all completely off the floor. I mean, there really is not really any consequences for...
Well, that's exactly what I was pointing out. The consequences come later.
Right.
It's very much like workplace labor regulations. The Sago disaster some years back in West Virginia probably could have been prevented, but nobody had a union. So nobody had anybody to go to and say, the hole's not safe and I don't want to die down there, because the response is of the mine boss to say, well, you know what, pack your stuff and go home and you'll never work in a mine around here again.
Mm.
And sure, once that's happened, you can go and you can file your Unfair Labor Practices Act claim, and you can probably get a hearing in front of the NLRB 6 or 7 years later, but the problem is in that intervening period of time, your family is starving, and you can't keep the lights on, and the water gets cut off.
Right. And you bring an interesting point. I can't even imagine what they would do with if internet voting got in, cleared.
Oh, I don't even want to think about it.
I mean, technically, they've already gotten on in that world of internet voting where people are loading up the tabulate.
Oh, I'm getting emails from somebody in Canada who says that I'm a total right-wing shill if I don't come out and say that there needs to be internet-based voting on every issue.
Internet-based voting.
Yeah.
On every, but do they understand?
You know, basically, we just had the United States would be a giant Congress. It would be a true democracy.
Right. But do they understand that the amount of hijinks that when you open the door like that wide?
Oh no. We can make it safe.
Oh, of course, we can make it safe. It reminds me of the situation what was happening with the Florida elections. What was brought up in the newspaper, we talked about it, the fact that they had the central tabulator completely open on the internet, so anyone who wanted to log in on the old web browser could take a look at the central tabulator, the districts, all of the machines, the passwords, everything was there.
But it's good, yeah. But we can make it safe. I'm sure we can.
We can definitely make it safe. We really need to push forward. You know what? We don't even need a password for internet voting. All we need to do is just use our Twitter accounts.
Yeah, you know, just like you vote in the polls on the newspaper website.
Yeah, just use our Twitter accounts. You know what would be good? What about the Facebook like?
Hey, just like Facebook button. Like it, and we'll be fine.
Yeah, just do that.
Beautiful.
But anyways, have we had any, before I go, have we had any anyone enter Rainbow Racing yet?
We have not had an email slugged my Rainbow Race, but it's out there. It's out there for $20 contribution?
I'll leave that to you on that one.
Okay.
Have we had a response from the Game of Thrones?
Sadly, no, which kind of blew my mind.
So no one
jumped in on season one of Game of Thrones.
Well, you know what, Bob? I'm sorry, people, but now I have to. Bishop Bob gets it automatically because you guys missed it. So.
Oh, no.
you win.
No, I've never won anything in my life.
You never have? Well, now you have.
I think I did say me, didn't I?
Yeah, I think you did. There you go. I mean,
the offer remains open until showtime tomorrow evening. How's that?
Okay, well, we'll do that. And if not, it's him.
and you know what? Agnes will love it.
I'm sure she will. It's not a show. Okay, I'll admit this. It's not a show for the quote-unquote family, the 7-year-olds, the 10-year-olds, and
no, but the teenagers can watch it.
Yeah, the teenagers can watch it. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So through showtime tomorrow night. Otherwise, Agnes and I curl up and do our best Mike and Carol Brady impression, and watch Game of Thrones.
And that goes for the. I mean, hopefully someone. I guess I have to sell it. And sell it.
You know, nothing moved like the big basket o' meat. I gotta tell you.
I know. I mean, okay, so let me just say, the Pete Seeger documentary, for those who haven't seen it, it's amazing. I guarantee you'll like it. You and your family will have serious discussions, lighthearted discussions. Everything that you would want in a documentary about someone's life is covered from front to back.
And there's a heck of a lot of life there.
Right, and you want it on your DVD library to show that someone, even if your son or your daughter isn't born yet, you want to show them that somebody like this did exist. If he does pass away, God forbid, during the time when you show them this documentary. But if something like that, you want to show people like that because we need to keep.
Oh, suddenly
people.
We have interest. Game of Thrones, asks Michael in Ohio. How much is that going for?
Bob, I'm gonna leave that to you.
Well, no, we said it. Game of Thrones. We said Friday night was going for the low contribution love offering of $20, didn't we?
I think we did. Yes, we did. We set that. Okay, so Michael in Ohio, you have won.
No, he only asked. No, he hasn't bid in yet.
He just asked. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that goes for, I mean, just to finish up.
And by the way this works, don't send the money because I don't want three or four people going, I'll take it. Just send me an email saying, right. I want it, and if you're first, you get it.
Right. That's the way to do it. And so, like I said, if the Pete Seeger documentary has caught your curiosity and you're interested in it, I suggest you look on YouTube, and then if you really feel the need and the impulse and you want to see something like this, then type in Rainbow Race in the title.
Yeah, Rainbow Race, subject line, send it to bobkincaid@gmail.com. There you are.
I think we'll do a contribution for like $10. Let's set that.
Okay, for the Pete Seeger?
For the Pete Seeger, yeah.
Okay, cool. Sounds good. David, thanks a bunch.
All right, Bob.
Have a good night. Bye.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
Halfway through this More and Monday edition of The Horn. Okay. A question going out to you, David, and I almost hesitate to even ask this because Isaac saw this for the first time over the weekend and immediately tweeted me going, man, have you seen, oh, yes, I have, the wild, wonderful whites of West Virginia. Oh, God, how I hate that film. But Agnes looked at me and said, the what? I said, no, the whites. And so fired that one up on Netflix, and she, bless her heart, she just sat there with her little head in her hand saying, is it safe to look again? Boy. So, David, I know, come on, Isaac. He's our pop culture correspondent. You know he's seen this. David folds space or something to make more time in his life in order to watch all these things. I mean, it's like News Ninja Gene getting up every morning and reading the entire internet. He does that. And I know, there are a couple of funny moments in the Wild, Wonderful Whites of West Virginia, but what it has done to this state. You know, we're sitting here. The Wild, Wonderful Whites of West Virginia is a real moron problem because people get to watch it outside West Virginia and say, see, that's what all them hillbillies is like. But we're not. Sweet Jesus, we're not. I mean, I haven't huffed gasoline in at least a week and a half, okay? But, you know, for those of us who are out there on the road and trying to talk to people and trying to help them understand that West Virginia is worth saving, everybody can point to the Wild, Wonderful Whites of West Virginia and go, no, it ain't! Just saying. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Paul from Portland.
Well, hey, Paul. How you doing?
I am alive and occasionally lifting my head up out of the chemistry books and thinking the world is just getting weirder and weirder because I'm not following the news every day, just kind of every week.
And you will soon be fully edumacated, right?
Yeah, 7 weeks to go and counting.
Wow, that's amazing.
And then hopefully I can get some work and...
No, onward toward the doctorate!
No, I tried that. They said no.
Oh. Well, there's still...
I'd have to take a paycheck at this point.
Well, I can understand that, too.
But yeah, it just gets weirder and weirder. On that note, Brother Albert did whisper something into the ear of the universe, and it panned out. So here's my whisper: I would like to see the famous YouTube video or something of Mitt Romney debating himself. Just a standard debate where a question is asked, and Mitt Romney takes one side, and Mitt Romney for another time period takes another side, and just have that go on for a while. I think that
haven't they done one of those already?
I don't know, but it would be really funny if you could cut it and do it well.
I think it's out there in like the 1 minute version, but with every passing day, it turns into a longer video, Paul.
Ugh. Because you know what bothers me about Romney and
what did you catch the one today? Like I said, with every passing day, it gets worse. You say you know you're kind of locked out of the news a little bit. Well, today. Romney spokes creep came out Now, this is after Willard said, burn, baby, burn to Detroit. This is after Willard said, you know, we shouldn't be bailing these car companies out. They need to go through a bankruptcy. And basically, Detroit and the entire auto industry in the United States would have effing died. Now, General Motors is back to being the number one car company in the world. Well, today, one of Willard's people said, see, it worked out just like Willard said it would. They did what he told them, and it came to fruition, and see how smart Willard is? And, I mean, that was one of those facepalm moments, Paul. I mean, the guy couldn't have been any clearer. He wanted them to go bust. He wanted them to go broke. He wanted them to go out of business. Probably because he had somebody on the inside of Bain Capital saying, you know what, we can probably pick this up for pennies on the shares, Willard. Now, see if you can't convince people to let him go bust.
If he is elected president, will we know what his first term is, or will it just be a bunch of doublespeak and we won't know what actually he signed into law and what he vetoed?
If he were to be elected president, the actual president of the United States will be, there's a whole scenario here. But if he's elected president, the president of the United States will be John Boehner and Mitch McConnell if the Republicans take back the Senate. That's who the president will be, because they'll just send him loads and loads and loads of absolutely crazy things, and I'll sign this one. What? Poor people? Screw them. I'll sign that one.
What disturbs me about Mitt Romney, and it's just my most, you know, there's lots of things that disturb me, not Mitt Romney that disturb me, but what disturbs me most is it's sort of like a childlike point of view, but it's the view I got from Reagan, and it's the same view I have of Dick Cheney and Mitt Romney, which is they all seem to talk like those animatronic robots from Disneyland or Disney World, and it freaks me out. I think there's just a plug that runs. They're plugged into a wall somewhere for power.
Well, there is that line from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Hey, what did Abraham Lincoln say at the Hall of Presidents? Welcome to the Hall of Presidents.
Yes, kind of like that.
Yeah.
Although the bowl of tapioca pudding is also a good analogy.
Oh, I thought David hit that one out of the park. A stuttering bowl of tapioca pudding.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I'm not really a big fan of our choices. I over the 4 years of President Obama, I've liked some of the things he's done, but he definitely doesn't inspire me with the same oomph that he did in 2008.
No, and I think part of that is because he got into the business of governing, and it is far easier to run for president and talk about what you will do than to be president and do something.
Well, then why can't Mitt Romney actually talk about what he will do? Because I'm fairly confused.
Because then he wouldn't be president.
Understandable.
And I know that doesn't make a lot of sense, but then again, neither does he. You know, he wants everybody to live in a Papa John's pizza mansion when it is physically impossible for the planet to support that.
Well, that's never stopped him before. I'm giving a whole talk on Friday in front of the chemistry department on biopolymers, because we use a lot of 5% of the oil and natural gas and coal we pump and take out of the ground, we turn into plastic because we can't turn that stuff into burnable fuel. And there's only so much oil in the ground or coal in the mountain, and eventually we're going to run out of plastic, and we need to figure out a way to make them from, you know, soybean oil and lactose and all this other stuff to basically make it work. And that's the kind of stuff that I've been looking at, because it's not going to last forever.
You know, it's interesting you would mention that, Paul, because I think I'm a nerd, okay? I just am. And I think about that kind of thing. I think about finite hydrocarbons, and I do acknowledge that they are useful for some things, and that therefore we ought not be burning it like there's no tomorrow. Because there will come a day when we might need some sort of hydrocarbon resource in order to produce, you know, the steel for wind turbines or solar panels and things like that. And you, because this, it's all process based, and it's all, they're incredibly long chains of production involved with all of this. I mean, am I making any sense?
Yeah, but there is a fallacy to that, which is that, you know, they pump crude oil out of the ground, it goes to the refinery, and they separate octane and other stuff out of it for the gasoline, and a lot of the leftover larger molecules are used for plastics, like benzene and styrene and
right.
a bunch of others. So what we're burning isn't necessarily what we're what we need for plastics.
Right, but I mean, but we still need the stuff out of the ground, right?
Yep.
That part's kind of unavoidable.
Well,
and we don't know yet how to do it.
Yeah, we're working on that real hard. There's just not a lot of money for it. But there's some amazing stuff happening, and they're making some huge changes. They're looking at basically making a lot of these plastic parts that go into machines and stuff and cars and some computers to basically make them from lactose or lactide, sorry, rather than oil from the ground. So you could just have a renewable resource.
And I mean, just from your vantage point, Paul, looking at how far are we from that? Are we measuring it in years or in decades? I mean, is it next century?
Honestly, Bob and the Horn family, it's basically like the space program. It could happen tomorrow. It's just when, you know, President Kennedy, with no space program, and he said, we're going to put a man on the moon within 10 years, and got the people behind it and the money behind it, and it happened. It can happen within probably 2 to 5 years if they get a program like that going. So it's just about the attention and focusing the energy on the idea.
So in terms of focusing our research intent, it would be better to be doing things like that than, say, trying to figure out how to turn coal into gasoline.
Yeah, that's not a good idea.
And tonight's understatement award goes to Paul from Portland.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I you know, David from Maine's probably seen this documentary, too. I watched a documentary about a year ago on Netflix called Collapse, where they interviewed an ex-LAPD detective who is now an investigative reporter, and he does talks and stuff on energy and whatnot, and he had a point of view of looking at energy in terms of just you get more energy out of it than you put into it, and it costs you energy to make things in terms of, and that's a good way to look at how we speed to our energy future, that an energy that we get a refund on, basically, that we invest energy in and get a refund on. And putting more energy into coal, after all the energy you took it out of the ground for, and making it gasoline, expending more energy to make it gasoline than to burn gasoline is...
And taking 4 gallons of clean water to make 1 gallon of dirty coal gas, and the water can never be cleaned up again.
I thought that was just the tar sands, which also drives me crazy.
No. Our entire congressional delegation, Blanche Manchin in particular, was absolutely on fire to turn coal into gasoline. And, yeah, it takes 4 gallons of clean, fresh water to make 1 gallon of coal gasoline.
Bob, I might say something that might make you angry here, but I'm kind of waiting for the day when a West Virginian congressman, whether it be state or federal or senator, state or federal, makes this statement. We've got to blow up / destroy West Virginia to save West Virginia.
Quit waiting. It's been said.
Oh, it's been said? Oh, I'm just behind the times.
No, I mean, say if you, anytime you challenge mountaintop removal, Paul, that's what you get. Well, it's our economic future. I mean, Blanche Manchin was in Beckley Friday evening at the Chamber of Commerce and gave a speech basically from 100 years ago. See, once upon a time, and you find out this kind of thing listening to the Prism series with Dr. Bill and Professor Keith, West Virginia had a group of governors who were referred to as the Bourbons. And they were boosters. And they said, you know, we got nothing here but natural resources. We need some outside investment to come in and exploit us. And there, you know, if you challenge mountaintop removal, yeah, but that's our economic... Coal is still... when the scientists come out and say, listen, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, there's only 25 years of coal left in West Virginia, tops, some politician will run out, having been cattle prodded by a member of the coal industry, and say, well, that ain't true. Coal is West Virginia's future. West Virginia's coal, and coal is West Virginia. And the entirety of mountaintop removal is destroying West Virginia to save it.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not going to be mean or anything, but I intend to confront people when I get a chance to talk to them, these shareholders and so forth, and explain to them that whatever price they got, whatever quarterly share dividend they received, that it came out of my hide, and that their investment in Bank of America is literally killing people in West Virginia, because this new statistic that there are 3,975 excess deaths per year in West Virginia alone from coal, well, that means there's a price on our heads. And there are about the same number of mountaintop removers. So every year, a mountaintop remover gets to kill one of his fellow West Virginians so he can have a job, because he quit school when he was 16 because he heard he could learn to run a D9 CAD on an MTR site and make $70,000 a year.
The insanity of it, it just boggles my mind. I read a story last week that the landscape of Greenland is changing. The glaciers are melting due to global climate change.
Yes.
And what was said in the article is, well, the plus side is that the tourism is increasing because people are coming to see it. And it's just like, it's the same logic of, you know, the polar ice caps are melting up the north. Oh, yeah, great. We can create new shipping lanes through them.
Well, yeah, like I said, I'm a geek and I do things like looking at Google Earth. For some reason, I went and looked up Devil's Island, you know, off the coast of French Guiana.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that the Wikipedia entry said on it was 50,000 tourists a year now visit Devil's Island. And it's great for the local economy. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, what about all the political prisoners who died there?
There's nothing about that.
Right. Crickets. And you know, there's every time I see one of these stories, I just want to weep. It has now been declared that the largest untapped coal resource on the planet is in Mozambique. And people are dying like flies.
They're doing the equivalent of mountaintop removal?
No, they're just digging, they're darn sure not doing traditional underground mining. Because, no, they're just digging big open cesspit mines. And bless their hearts, they've taken to the streets and they said, no more, we're not going to tolerate it.
I hope that we can solve these problems and get off this stuff. Enough people can wake up and get off this before, you know, scientifically this stuff is going to reach a point of critical mass where it's not going to be West Virginia. You know, as you said before, the headwaters of the streams and the rivers are being poisoned and destroyed, and basically you're going to get enough filth and whatnot in West Virginia that it's basically going to pop like a zit and spread all over the southeast and poison everybody, and horribly. And I hope that we can get our minds to a more sane level before that it just, you know, before these huge death zones become irritating.
Well, and you know, we really don't even begin to have our heads around it, Paul, because, for instance, what's going on in Mozambique is being perpetrated by a Brazilian mining company called Vale do Rio Doce, I don't know, my Portuguese sucketh. But the point is, and these are scary numbers for anyone who is concerned at all about, you know, cooking the planet. By 2030, global coal production will have jumped by more than 50%. Now, it will have decreased, and perhaps even ceased by 2030 here in Central Appalachia, because they got it all. But in the world at large, it is going to 50% more coal is going to be being used in 2030 than is being used now. And they will be primarily used in what are being referred to as the BRICS country: Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa.
I don't know what point it'll take. What do you think? 5-10% of every person on the planet being affected, having their health affected and their gallbladder?
No, that won't matter.
That won't make a difference?
No. In 1972, the Buffalo Creek disaster claimed 125 lives and ruined 3,000 others. That was when a multi-million gallon sludge dam broke in southern West Virginia in Logan County and sent a wall of toxic sludge down Buffalo Creek Holler. And the coal industry never even slowed down. As long as people are making horse-gagging loads of filthy profits off of this, there is somebody out there, and that somebody has no stake, no say in the process, nothing whatsoever, Paul. There's somebody out there that the profiteers are willing to kill to get the money. I mean, we have the highfalutin economists running around, and they talk about their theories, and but the fact of the matter is, it's still all mercantilism. It is still all commodity-based. Poor Mozambique has been cursed with coal under its ground. And now these the countries of the so-called developing South, global South, are feeling their oats, and they're going to go they're tired of being exploited for the last 500 years, Brazil is. So they're going to go exploit somebody else. Congratulations, Mozambique. You're it.
You know how you keep saying that when we're on the bus and we're idling and waiting for people?
Yeah.
New plan. We needed to build a spaceship and get off it, and those who want to come, and put a bumper sticker on the back of the spaceship that says, "So long and thanks for all the fish."
There you go. Well, that's what I was saying earlier about, the profiteers just can't come to grips with the fact that nobody here has gotten off the rock and stayed yet. Onward to Dystopia in the chat room reminding me. He says, "Remember, Bob, the coal thugs believe that the West Virginians are an invented people, you know, like leprechauns and hobbits and stuff, hillbillies. You know, we're invented. We're an invented people."
No, unfortunately, you're just an expendable people.
We are that.
But it's a country that's predicated on expendable people. There's been loads of them.
And it's, well, let's be certain about this. It's not just this country, Paul. There are people all over the planet that are expendable, and the United States has done a magnificent job of expending a lot of them, and we've done it for profit. And now, because we set the model up, there are other parts of the planet that are saying, "Hey, it's our turn. How come it was good enough for you, but it's not good enough for us? On to Mozambique."
And on to Australia. They're doing it in Australia.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's going to get far worse before it ever gets better in Australia. And there are people mobilized down there. You know, it was a few months back, New Zealand had 40,000 people in the streets demanding an end to it. But the problem is, you have to go into the streets and stay there. And we haven't gotten to that point yet.
Well, I hope we do. Last summer, I was watching a Texas news, local news, just because it was on the TV. And it was during the heat wave, and there were people complaining that basically it got so hot their water pipes broke because the infrastructure hasn't been updated in so long that people
right.
get water to their house. And there were, you know, folks going, you know, "We need water, we need it now, you know, get government, get off your butt and do something." And I'm wondering, you know, basically, A, if that person it is a conservative, and B, if they're still a conservative in the sense of, you know, as they see stuff, you know, falling apart around them, did they... Well, ever stop and wonder perhaps we should try a different method? Because that's what it's going to be. It's going to be about water. Water is going to become the most precious resource, and, you know, clean water is going to become the most precious resource in the world. Period, I think. time audience.
It already is. It already is. And the thing is, the people in New York and Pennsylvania, you know, fracking central, West Virginia's already had most of our water ruined by coal, but what hasn't been ruined, the frackers are after. Eventually, we will get to a point where there isn't any to drink.
Yeah, I'm wondering kind of about that because, you know, you've got the Gulf of Mexico tainted by all the oil. You've got pretty much the East Coast tainted by all the fracking, and the West Coast out here has got whatever's coming at it from Fukushima, slowly but surely.
And then there's that area the size of Texas that's nothing but plastic bottles somewhere in the middle of the Pacific.
Yeah. There's the water level, and we're melting all the glaciers off, so we can't drink glacier water. So, you know, we're in serious trouble. I was wondering about that Fukushima radiation tank because I was reading last week that there. I read a lot of scientific articles and just weird nature articles about stuff that's not reported in the mainstream media. Something like 866 some odd dolphins have been found dead on a beach in Peru over since the start of January on like a 100-mile span of beach. And I'm wondering if that's radiation poisoning from Fukushima. Now, a year is about what it would take to travel that far in terms of disbursement.
I guess you'd kind of have to know what the migratory patterns are of the dolphins, wouldn't you? Although you could certainly test them. I mean, a Geiger counter.
They wouldn't make it far if they got radiation poisoning because it's getting radiation poisoning by drinking water into your system, it'll kill you pretty quickly. It's not like a...
Well, there's all kinds of stuff we do underwater that drives animals crazy. Underwater blasting, even sonar, it has been posited as being incredibly painful to sensory organs underwater. I mean, that's why, you know, when sonograms first came out and all the couples who were expecting babies, you know, they wanted a sonogram every other week to watch the baby grow, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then a few people started saying, wait a minute, there are some signs of fetal distress when we're doing this. And suddenly sonograms dropped back considerably. You get one at like 16 weeks or whatever, and then as needed thereafter.
Why can't we ever take it slow when we find something new? When we invented the fluoroscope, we had it in the 40s and 50s, we had it in shoe stores so people could just watch the bones of their feet through the x-ray. And then we figured that was a bad thing and it caused massive cancer and radiation exposure, and we toned it down to half a second, you know, four times a year max for x-ray.
Yeah.
Why do we have to go, you know, hog wild into the trough instead of deserving?
Well, in some cases, because it's profitable. I mean, you know, I just had this thing that happened last week. And once again, I got a CT scan. They CT me every time I go in. And so that would be four or five in the last 5 years. And that's a pretty hefty dose. And they're not good for you.
Now, is the CT scan the radioactive dye injection?
Well, they can do it with or without contrast.
Okay.
I've had some with and some without. I tend to tolerate that stuff pretty well, but, that's just insult on injury. But the report that came out 9 months or so ago, a year ago, that showed that the dosages being given by individual CT scanners, depending on manufacturer and competence of the operator, were wildly different. And basically the report said that in 25 years, we're going to have a massive, massive, just nationwide cancer cluster from ill-advised usage of the CT scanner. I guess this is the cheerful part of the program. Paul, it's awful good to hear from you, my friend, and best of luck as you move toward your full matriculation. And keep us posted, will you?
Yeah, I'll talk to you when I can pull my head up against here.
All right, sounds good. Take care. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you.
Bye. Bye now. Paul, calling from Portland. He will be finishing his science degree and be a master thereof. Say May. Michael wrote in, Kid A from the chat room. Expendable people, huh? I guess West Virginians, instead of being called rednecks, should be referred to as red shirts. #obligatory Star Trek reference. Sorry. Yeah. Have you any... Of course, my favorite line being the one from Galaxy Quest. Have you people never even watched the program? Yeah, no lines, red shirts, that's us. And, Michael, you might find this interesting. When a young'un who's never done it before decides to go down into the mines, you know, underground mining, the respectable kind, he is a red hat. And the hard hat that he wears underground is red. How about that? Hmm? Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Cossack, how you doing, my friend?
Hanging in there, hanging.
Well, I got your email the other night, and I hope you're doing better, although you didn't sound terribly optimistic.
Not too happy. Speaking of CT scans, I'm going to have one. Near future. I got to get my carotids.
Oh, joy.
Yeah.
I thought they usually used sonograms for that.
Yeah, but now they need a CT scan to take a look at the actual artery. It's kind of in bad shape.
Yuck. Well, if they do something with it, can I give you a piece of advice? And, of course, I'm not a doctor, and I don't play one on the radio, but I actually have some experience with this. My father participated in an experimental program back at the beginning of the century in which one of his carotids was fixed by carotid endarterectomy, in which they open up your neck, cut out the carotid artery, the offending piece of the carotid artery, literally lay it open in the operating room, scrape out all the goop, sew it back together, and stick it back in your neck. The other side of his neck he had done by the experimental procedure up at the Cleveland Clinic, in which they simply ran up through his groin and put a stent in. It did absolutely as well, if not better, than the carotid endarterectomy, because a week after the carotid endarterectomy, he had some little piece of crap break loose, and he went stiff as a board and had a little stroke. And I'm terrified of this damn gallbladder surgery, but I'm not doing that to scare you. But if you, it just, you know, it's good to know that that stuff is out there. Say, I want the stent. And if they say there's no such thing, say, yes, there is.
Yeah, it's kind of a pain in the arse. The body's falling apart faster than I can pick up parts of the balloon back on.
Yeah, it's. I don't envy you.
Yeah. Yes, the reason for my call.
Ah, indeed.
Doesn't it say in the Bill of Rights that we have the right to peacefully assemble and petition for our grievances?
Petition for redress of grievances? Why, yes, as a matter of fact, it does.
Okay, I don't, as I recall, when that was passed, assemble didn't mean drive into town, protest, pack up your shit, and leave.
No, because then generally you were getting there by wagon, so you were coming to stay a while.
Mm-hmm. And why is it now that suddenly, oh, I'm sorry, we have problems with all of you occupiers. You can't do this. This isn't what we mean by free speech. This is not what we mean by freedom to assemble.
No, freedom to assemble is what happens when teabaggers come and wear tri-cornered hats and bring their guns. That's freedom of assembly. And then they go away. Because we're scared of them.
Well, the elites have always been scared of the people. The John Adamses have always held a jaundiced view of the public.
Well, and so have the Thomas Jeffersons.
A little less.
Those guys were a complicated lot.
Yeah. But Jefferson, at least on an intellectual plane, understood what it meant to have a democracy, at least from some of his writings and utterances.
And as soon as humanly practicable, they did away with any notion thereof. I mean, I have been profoundly changed, Cossack, by the stuff that I have read, because the beauty of what Dr. Bill and Professor Keith do is that they don't sit there and tell you what their viewpoint is. Instead, they haul out the actual documents written by the actual people.
Right.
And when dude says we are assembling in this constitutional convention because there's too much democracy in our little confederated republic, they weren't kidding. They meant it.
Yeah.
And so the document with which they came up, to wit, the Constitution, was all about keeping democracy from happening.
Right. From keeping the people down.
And the Madison's argument against a Bill of Rights weren't necessarily because he was some sort of fascist. He just didn't care. He thought that it was utterly unnecessary. And every one of these people were talking to every other one. You know, if you read the Federalist Papers are written by mostly Madison and Hamilton, right?
And Jay, yeah.
Well, they're not writing arguing with each other. They're all writing arguing in favor of the same thing.
Correct.
And the people who dared speak up against the Constitution or dared to defend the Articles of Confederation, well, one of them, I forget which one, he was publicly destroyed.
Yeah.
They lambasted him as a no-account drunk who could not be depended upon. Now, these were the founding fathers and the authors of our freedom. As Dr. Bill pointed out on Saturday, they used John Hancock like an old dish rag to get him to bring his people along toward ratification. And where the Articles of Confederation would have required 100% agreement by all 13 states. They got around that by just saying that the Constitution would be ratified if 9 states voted in favor. Oh, it was a piece of work.
Oh, yeah.
And by the way, Michael noting, he says, freedom to assemble is now the new slogan at IKEA. It is not a statement of our freedoms. We're free to go buy stuff at IKEA and put it together at home. There's your freedom of assembly.
Well, like I said, as I read the document, it meant the right to assemble, period, end of quotation, no time limit.
Oh, no, there is no time limit as expressed therein, but as soon as Justice Marshall declared that the Supreme Court would be the final determinant of the meaning of the Constitution, they started interpreting.
Yeah.
And you'll notice that the Alien and Sedition Acts ran through under the Adams administration with no constitutional hitch whatsoever.
Correct.
And you really don't get meaning. And this is a function of us living in our own time, as is the curse of any people at any time. But you don't get the interpretation of the First Amendment to which you and I are most accustomed until well after the First World War. You know, the Schenck, Frowork, and Debs cases. They were absolutely brutally repressed. And they were done so at the connivance of the Supreme Court of the United States.
Well, part of the problem is the fact that we keep on hiding from the phrase class war. And Buffett called it. He called it correctly.
Yeah, and when he said, my side is winning?
Right. There is a class war, and my side is winning.
But I guess the point I'm trying to make is there has been class war from the very inception of our present form of government. The Constitution
Right.
itself was a manifestation of class warfare.
Correct.
And they won that one too, Cossack.
Right. Well, they always win. The governing elites always win. I mean, that's one of the reasons why the distribution of income is as skewed as it is. Because those who have a voice in government, and those are the, you know, it's not you and I, there's the mega wealthy. They have a voice in government, and by God, their voice is a hell of a lot louder than yours or mine.
Without a doubt.
My words but a whisper, your deafness a shout.
Yeah. Indeed.
It's, like I said, people get the wrong impression who weren't there. In the 60s, when we had demonstrations, the violence wasn't from the demonstrators.
No, it was the cops rioting.
Correct. I mean, it wasn't the demonstrators that were firing tear gas at the poor, unprepared police.
Well, it goes much further back than that. The Haymarket massacre was a matter of repressing people who were otherwise peaceably assembled. The early railroad strikes. Those killings were massacres of people peaceably assembled.
Correct. Well, the Pullman strikes.
Yeah, one of which began in Martinsburg, West Virginia.
Correct. And, like I said, people... I don't know. We do not know history. We do not know even our own history. Real history. Or as then we call it, a people's history. We know the manufactured crap they drill into us in school. But history was made not by the great names. History was made by the nameless masses.
The nameless, expendable masses. That's why when...
Correct.
You know, when I see this jackass in Kentucky with his McMansion, what's his name, John Schnatter, of Papa John's fame?
Yeah.
No. The rich don't build anything that is not soaked in blood or tears or grief. You know, he would not, you know, he wouldn't have a 9-hole course instead of 18 if he'd paid his workers $10 an hour instead of 7. But even 10 bucks an hour is not a living wage. And the people making the 7 or $10 an hour aren't getting 40 hours a week. They're not getting health care. You know, that mansion in Kentucky, the bricks in that mansion in Kentucky, or maybe the mortar between them, Cossack, is there because some guy died of preventable disease because he didn't have health care, because John Schnatter didn't think he was worth providing health care to. Job creators. The only jobs these sons of bitches are creating are in funeral homes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't understand where they get this job creator myth from.
Well, they didn't get it from anywhere. They just make it up. Like, they just make up other things, too, because they're damned liars. And they're trying to create, and this is all part of it. This is all part of a set piece, Cossack. You know, the one where they sort of tickle us with the notion. Let's like Romney said, you know, a Democrat would say this and say nobody needs to live like this. We hate golf courses. A Republican sees this and wants everybody to live this way. Yeah, because there's enough room in America for everybody to have a mansion with a tennis court and a swimming pool and a golf course. Because America needs more golf courses. And this comes from somebody who likes, or used to like, I can't afford it anymore, used to like to swing the sticks.
Again, one of the pastimes I do not understand, who was it, Churchill, who defined golf as a good walk ruined?
No, that was Twain.
Twain, okay.
Yeah. I do understand it. To be out at sunrise on a golf course, you, your bag, just walking the 18. It's a very, very, and this is, you know, I'm not talking about going to Bushwood and having dinner in the men's grill after. I'm talking about a golf course where it's you and there's somebody behind you and somebody in front of you. Everybody's obeying the rules. Golf is a game that is played in your brain. You know, Michael Jordan can make $5 million bets about 3-foot putts till hell freezes over. He will not have as much fun as I have by myself or with one dear friend. Not competing with the friend, but competing with the course, which ultimately is competing with oneself. I suppose if we were having this conversation in Arabic, one might say that golf is a manifestation of jihad. Because jihad is a struggle that takes place inside the self. I always thought of golf as being particularly zen. Because no matter how angry you get, you will not play better. No matter how... If you try to hit the ball as hard as you can, it might go a long way, but it's not going to go the way you want it to.
No, it'll go that away.
Yeah. But, I do get it. But I also don't play it anymore.
Well, the thing is, I mean, we don't seem to understand that when the Chinese and the Indians come online and want to live the American lifestyle, there aren't enough Earths.
Right, but by the same token, if you're talking to Brazilian, Russian, Indian, or Chinese, or South African people, and you tell them that, can you see how that might ring a little hollow with them? Oh, sure, you say that now that you're not the ones doing it.
Of course, but we shouldn't be doing it.
Let's also understand that the capital for that Brazilian coal company that's raping Mozambique, let's understand that's not all Brazilian money. Okay, and it's not all Indian money, and it's not all Russian money, and it's not all Chinese money. It's American money. It's Western money. It's Dutch money. It's Japanese money. It is English money. It's French money. It's German money. You know, German banks finance mountaintop removal. French banks finance mountaintop removal. American banks finance mountaintop removal. Because they've all been... well, look, it's good. You know, they pay us back and everything. We make a little interest. We make a little share profit, and everything's good, right? Until you have to confront the people who have to live with it.
And everybody gets a share.
And everybody has a share. Thank you, Captain Minderbinder. Good to hear from you, Cossack. I hope you get to feel a little bit better, and I hope the CT of the carotids comes out okay. I hope there's nothing wrong with them.
No, nothing right with them. So.
Yeah, that sucketh. Take care, my brother.
All right, you too, Bob. Say hi to everybody.
I sure will. I think you just did.
All righty.
We'll talk soon. Bye now.
Sure. Bye-bye.
The Cossack calling from North Florida. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program. Anybody? Bueller? Bueller? Yeah, okay. I wanted to make sure we got this one in, because it is Moran Monday, and I am not, by any stretch of the imagination, out of Morans. Oh, no, we've got lots of Morans. Any given Moran Monday, we have more Morans than we have Monday for. I'm thinking in particular... Oh, hey, I mentioned this earlier. Let me run a little bit of the audio for you. Run over to YouTube and subscribe to Dark Matter 2525. You will enjoy Dark Matter 2525's work, his work. The Book of Job. Just give a quick listen.
This is Job. He's very loyal to God. He's well respected, and he has a pretty good life with a lovely wife, 7 sons, 3 daughters, and plenty of material possessions, including 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 donkeys, and many servants. All that is about to change.
Satan! Beelzebub a ding dong! Long time no see. Where the hell you been, girl?
I thought you were omniscient.
Just been wandering around the earth. Chilling. So, did you by any chance notice my homeboy, Job?
God.
He's one of my all-time favorites. The dude fears me and shuns you. Yeah, he's cool with you, sure. But that's just because you give him a sweet life. Screw with his life, and he'll become a hater. Care to, make a little bet on that?
God.
Sure.
Lucy, don't stoop to his level.
Okay. Do whatever you want to his stuff, but just don't hurt him. Deal?
Deal.
Oh, by the way, the little squirrely sounding dude, that's the angel Jeffrey. Wait, isn't this the same soundtrack from the Catholic Bishop's Vote the Wrong Way and We'll Send You to Hell video? Yeah, this is the passage where all Job's family gets killed, you know, for a bet between the devil and or Lucifer and God, and his house gets flattened and all of his animals get killed. And yeah, right.
Okay, this has gotten way out of hand.
Idle hand?
People are dying over this stupid bet.
Shut the hell up, Jeffrey. I'm trying to see what he does. Yeah, I got a lot of money riding on this.
Lord, you giveth unto me everything, so you may take it all back if thou wishes.
Funny how he sounds like Jim Tebow.
All my years of hard work surely did nothing to amass my fortune. No, it was all you. You giveth unto me those animals and servants who were slaughtered. And my 10 children, they existed... Surely not because I repeatedly impregnated my wife by way of sexual intercourse. No, but because you, an invisible, omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient, spaceless, timeless, uncaused, transcendent, absolute, perfect, benevolent deity, gave them unto me. So I have no problem with you taking them back. Camel Mart has a similar return policy, so why should not the Lord?
Okay, God, you won. It's over. Man, you are sadistic.
Satan, Lucy Goosey, where you been? Same old, same old. chilling.
Why do you keep asking? You know everything, and she knows you know, and you know she knows that you know.
Eh? Eh? How about that
Very
job,
knowledgeable,
man?
Aren't they?
You see? Fucked his shit up, and he's still my homie, yo. Yeah, but that was just his family and possessions. Fuck him up, and he won't be your homie anymore.
Don't either of you think it's a bit wrong to be gambling with people's lives?
Deal. Double or nothing. Sweet.
Yes, Matt.
And I'm not going to play anymore because I want you to go watch it. Just look for The Book of Job by Dark Matter 2525 over at the YouTubes. You will be ever so glad you did. And there's a whole bunch of other videos, too. Thanks to Isaac for turning me on to this. These things are amazing. There's one called The One Thing That God Can't Do. You're going to love it. You just are. More and Monday, right? 25 minutes past the hour, by the way. Texas Betsy sent this one along from the Professional Broadcasting Department. Yeah. This particular professional broadcaster goes by the name of Dominic Dieter. They're on WMMS 100.7, The Buzzard, out of Cleveland, Ohio. Or maybe it's WMMS 100.7, The Buzzard. And that's Cleveland, Ohio, not Cleveland, Tennessee. I guess this is one of those morning zoo crew craziness. Listen to us every morning and because we're crazy. Because we're professional high-paid broadcasters and we're paid to be crazy in the morning. Right? So they take listener emails and, twist them and have a high old time, and they be there and they get all crazy with them because they're the crazy crew on WMMS 100.7, The Buzzard. So dude writes in to say that he walked in as his teenage daughter was kissing another girl. And I don't have the audio for you, so you can thank me later. Or thank the Flying Spaghetti Monster or the God of Irony or whatever. I don't think I'd be running it anyway. So Dieter, who is a member of this morning zoo crew, tells the listener who has written the email, and this is a quote, by the way, "You should get one of your friends to screw your daughter straight." Man, that sounds like the kind of stuff happens in the Bible. Remember when Lot offered to give the people out, he was protecting the angels, and he promised to give the angels or give the people outside who wanted to see the angels. He promised that he would give them his virgin daughters to rape instead. Yeah, like I said, it sounds like you should get one of your friends to screw your daughter straight, right? You should get one of your friends to screw your daughter straight. You should get one of your friends to screw your daughter straight. Huh. No matter how you say it, it still doesn't quite sound right, does it? No matter how you say it, it sounds downright disgusting, doesn't it? No matter how you say it, it sounds... rapey, doesn't it? That's professional broadcasting. That's the kind of stuff you have to do if you want to be on the terrestrial airwaves. You know, what your daughter needs is a little of the old in out, in out. Maybe a bit of the Ludwig van. By the way, an executive confirmed that Dominic Dieter of Rover's Morning Glory said it. And just in case you're wondering, what kind of corporate consortium would tolerate and in fact promote this kind of sickening conduct on the air? Well, the answer's easy. Very easy. The answer is Clear Channel. Yeah, Clear Channel. Clear Channel that's owned by, in part, Bain Capital. Bain Capital, who is still writing checks to Mitt Romney because Mitt Romney still owns a chunk of Bain Capital. Yeah, there really is. There's a straight line that runs from Willard Romney to Dominic Dieter of Rover's Morning Glory on 100.7 The Buzzard, Cleveland. Ba-da-da. Nice, huh? You know, Willard, who says, lips that touch liquor shall never touch mine. His lovely wife, Anne, who says that she loves it that there are some women out there that have children and still have to go to work. She loves it. Willard and Anne and their five Osmond-looking children. And I don't mean the good-looking Osmonds either. I mean the funny-looking ones. Who won't touch caffeine because, you know, Joseph Smith said not to take any stimulants into your body. No booze either. They won't gamble and they play music together and they're all about close-knit families, but they don't have any objection to Dominic Dieter of Rover's Morning Glory on 100.7 The Buzzard, Cleveland, da-da-da, telling a man to have one of his skeevy friends rape his daughter straight. No word yet on whether, well, no. There's Dominic Dieter still has a job. Dominic Dieter needs to have a job somewhere else, not behind a microphone, not telling fathers to have their teenage daughters raped straight. Yeah, a little bit of the old love sausage, and she won't be one of them lesbos anymore. Professional broadcasting. So, too, it's also professional broadcasting when the oxymoron, Flush Flimball, suggests that starts trying to choose undergarments for the Secretary of State. My friend, she's only a secretary. All this time in government, and she's still only a secretary. Well, I don't think she needs Spanx. She needs spankles for those disgusting spankles of hers. I tear me up. I just kill me. Yeah, I think the drugs are kicking in for Rush. It's getting harder and harder and harder for him to hide from the fact that the junk is catching up with him. And catching up with him big time. Susie Parker, who writes at the Washington Post, had a column noting, talking about, you know, Rush's disgust with women. And it was a good column. But what I thought was particularly telling was that in her column she pointed to the fact, which you heard here first a long time ago via my head writer David in Tennessee, who gets to hear more of this than he likes and more than you're willing to tolerate. That Limbaugh is beginning to sweat, and that he is beginning to shake and slur. And it was the slurring that Susie Parker in particularly noted in her column. He's back on the junk. He's on something. You know, for a while he used to say things like, my formerly nicotine-stained fingers. Well, now he's back. He's back honking on the cigars on air again. The latest it's another one of those examples of highly professional multi-million-dollar-a-year broadcasting. And it's just, dadgummit, where'd it go? Let me find this real quick, because it's, among other things, back in the 90s, he hated, the Yugo. Now, and he went through this period, even though at one point he was a spokes creep for General Motors. They paid him with a car to say nice things about them. Now he hates the Prius. He hates the Toyota Prius because it's not burning gas, because, you know, we've got unlimited gasoline. Charming, isn't it? Oh, here it is. Yes. I think somebody's Freudian slip is showing, frankly.
Hi, friends, and welcome, Rush Limbaugh, the EIB Network, and the Limbaugh Institute for Advanced Conservative Studies on Open Line Friday. Fastest 3 hours in media, and I hope it really is. I got a new car, I'm getting a new car after the program. 8 miles to the gallon. I can't wait to get in the thing and find a Prius and give them an anal exam with my front bumper.
Because that's some real funny. Now, what's weird about it, though, is that America's truth detector. See, when you stay on the junk long enough, you lose the ability to sort of determine what you should and should not say. And that's kind of why I don't. That's why I promised that I won't do drug-addled radio here. I'd rather not do it at all than try to climb behind the microphone with a belly full of pain pills. But check this out. You heard that I can't wait to get... Oh, I'm picking 8 miles again. I can't wait to give it a Prius, an anal probe with my front bumper. Jesus, let me get in front. Get me a Prius and let me get in front of Flush down there in South Florida. I'll stomp on the brakes and he can anal probe the Prius all he wants to, and then he can get out and write the effing check. I kid. But at this point in time, this guy's, he's got an anal fixation. Let's see. When will the media do an anal exam of Obama?
Romney constantly escapes this media anal exam. He's the one guy the media is not vetting. Obama's had a press, for crying out loud, that's going to die of anal poisoning if this keeps up.
Talking about a documentary on HBO about Obama.
If a documentary could get anal poisoning, this one could.
Dr. Freud, courtesy phone. Dr. Freud, courtesy phone. And this one will drive Paul in Portland just a little bit crazy, and several other of you science types as well.
People who are new to this program need to ask yourself is this. Where did you acquire your arrogance and vanity? And I'm not trying to be insulting, but my point is this. I've always believed that...
You mean the arrogance and vanity of being proud of driving a vehicle that gets 8 miles to the gallon, that other people literally get poisoned to death so that you can waste more... Yeah, that kind of vanity flush? Okay, you're not asking about your own, because we know that your own comes from the fact that your brain is rotting from all the drugs and God knows what, tertiary syphilis perhaps, that you picked up from a little boy in the Dominican Republic. You need to be more careful about the boys you pick there, Rush. I mean, they may look young, but... Yeah.
Most people's historical perspective begins the day they were born. Most people believe whatever happens in their lifetimes is, in many cases, the first time anything has happened, or it's certainly the worst it's ever been throughout history. And so...
See, now what happens when he does things like this, when he talks about how most people behave and what most people think, what he's actually doing is he's describing himself. This is a poorly educated man. This is a man who couldn't find his way out of a degree program in a community college. And that's not, you know, he couldn't, you know, that's not... You know, he couldn't find his ass with both hands, or couldn't pour piss out of the boot with directions on the heel. He literally could not get out. He could not make it out of a community college program. But he had a daddy who owned a radio station. And it just goes from there.
You, because of that fact, because of the ability to think that history began when you were born, you are open to the propaganda that whatever the temperature is now... is normal. How do we know that?
I am not operating under the assumption that whatever the temperature is now is normal. Because we have these things, Flush, called records. And every last one of them has fallen in the last few years. And they're going to keep falling. Next year, the year after that, they're going to keep falling. You know, and everything's okay in the Gulf of Mexico, for instance, except for the shrimp being born with babies' arms coming out of their heads, hatched, whatever it is that happens to shrimp. The fishermen in the Gulf are pulling up horribly mutated BP shrimp. I saw a photograph of one. It was horrible.
How many thousands, hundreds of millions, whatever the argument, we don't even know that.
Wait, what do we not know, Flush? Let's back up.
How do we know that? The Earth is how many thousands, hundreds of millions, whatever the argument, we don't even know that. Listen, the Earth is 100,000 years old, just for the sake of discussion.
The Earth is 100,000 years old for the sake of discussion. Let's say the Earth is, you've got a problem there, because humanity does have a written history. And even if the written history is only, in the case of the earliest forms of Sumerian writing, even if they're only mainly bills of lading of, you know, how many bags of barley were owed to the king, it's still evidence of human activity. And that's, what, 5,000-7,000 years ago, Dr. John? You'll catch the podcast, I'm sure. Meanwhile, this is the portion of the program that will make Dr. John scream. But there's a problem, because there is a recorded history of human occupation of the planet. And even before the writing, there's carbon 14. And that's based upon the discernible, determinable, quantifiable decay of a radioactive isotope that behaves in a way that I guess fundamentalists hate. Because it's predictable. But let's say the Earth is 100,000 years old. Oxymoron. What then?
100,000 years old, how do any of us know that the temperatures in this year or in our lifetimes constitute norm, constitute what it's supposed to be?
Well, Flush, again, there's that pesky science. Because it's not just carbon isotopes. There are other isotopes as well that give us relative dates for the Earth. And beyond that, there are tree rings. And there are ice cores. For instance, for those who don't believe, and I mentioned this before, it's worth mentioning again, for those who don't believe in anthropogenic climate change, i.e. the idea that human beings can alter the climate, there are ice cores that show heavy carbon buildup in certain layers of the ice in freaking Greenland that correspond exactly to the time when the Romans were burning the Iberian Peninsula to the ground, literally deforesting the entire Iberian Peninsula in order to smelt the silver that they had discovered there. And the carbon came down in the form of snow contained in snowflakes that fell and were later buried and buried and buried and buried and buried. And they're right there, and you can read them. And there are tree rings. And the thin tree rings are years without so much rain, and the thick tree rings are rings with lots of years of rain. I mean, there's all kinds of science out there for people who don't spend their time chewing up OxyContin for the refreshing burst of effing flavor.
Maybe it's colder on average around the planet than it quote-unquote should be. And maybe if there is warming, maybe there's a correction going. Maybe it's not.
And maybe there are monkeys flying out your butt, Rush, for all the sense you're making.
Crisis. Maybe it's not a problem. The only way they can make you believe that global warming is a crisis requiring emergency procedures, which largely involve you giving up your freedom, is...
Huh? See, this is what you get into. It happens more in bars than anywhere else. You'll think that somebody is engaged in rational conversation. You're just sitting there enjoying your beer or whatever. And they'll come up and the next thing you know, they're telling you that there's a race of men in the trees. Or that global warming ain't real. And you realize that you're talking to somebody who's completely, absolutely, undeniably insane. The problem, however, is that that person will feel like crap in the morning when they sober up. But Flush Flemball never sobers up. He's always... He's not very, like I said, he's not very bright to begin with. Because bright people don't say the things he says. So you take not bright and you pour on a healthy dose of dope. Well, and you you see where it gets you.
What are you people? On dope?
Yes, he is. He is.
It's incumbent on you being made to believe at what's happening now.
Wait, freedoms, freedoms, freedoms. You're going to lose your freedoms. What freedoms? I need a list. Anybody care to provide me with a right-wing list of lost freedoms? Michael noting, Rush, he just wants to get all up in everyone and everything's ass. Jesus, I guess they don't let him into the Dominican Republic anymore. Poor guy. Whew. he has a fascination. I mean, one of those, you know, one of those provable by science. Oh, well, there's science again. Fascinations with other people's sexuality that is just bizarre. But we're losing our freedoms. What does transitioning toward clean, renewable, sustainable energy have to do with freedom? I'll take nothing for a thousand, Alex. Right you are.
Normal. This is the way God intended it. And if it gets a Celsius degree warmer in 100 years, we've got a problem. How do we know this? We don't know this. And we can't control it anyway. You ever ask yourself, if global warming, how do we make it cooler? We can't. We can't thus be responsible for it getting warmer. We're just stewards here.
Somebody's been talking to the Dominionists. We're just stewards here. Well, what does a steward do? Well, you saw the Lord of the Rings. He sits around with a broken sword and waits for the king to come back. The steward brings you, you know, the wine steward, he brings you your wine. And when you go on a cruise, the stewards make sure that your bed's made and that they've folded a towel into the shape of a swan or a monkey or something every time when you come back. That's what stewards do. We can't make it cooler, so therefore we didn't make it warmer. Anybody? Okay, so we know one of the classes he didn't take in that community college that he failed out of? Right? Introduction to logic. We can't make it cooler, so therefore we did not make it warmer. The science people in the Horn audience are beating their heads against their desks. I know this because I'm not a science people, and I am.
Just placeholders on this planet. We have the ability to protect and guard and so forth, but in terms of inventing any of this or causing any of this or correcting, we can't. We have to adapt is what we do. We adapt to whatever, and so do animals. Everybody adapts, and if you fail to adapt, it's sayonara.
Sayonara, I guess, is Limbaugh, OxyContin ease for mass extinction. You know, everybody except him and except his 1% pals, because they're going to build him some bubbles. Or maybe they'll figure out how to get off the rock. Stay off the rock, and I'm behind them 100% in that. And then those of us who are left who are, I don't know, or maybe Jesus is going to fly him away. I don't think even Jesus could fly a tub of guts like that.
But this is all smoke and mirrors. Just remember two things. Ask yourself constantly. Who wrote that what's now is normal? And any...
Nobody. No, the people on our side, you know, the ones with brains and science, they're saying what's now ain't normal. Yes, the climate fluctuates. Yes, the planet changes. That's because it's a living organism. But we, in our massive numbers, the greatest number of humans that have ever existed upon the planet, I think at this point in time there are more people alive on the planet than have ever died all taken together before now. And we say that that can't, humans can't, that makes no difference on the planet. Bullshit.
Thing less or higher or lower than today is a panic. Who wrote that? What kind of thinking? And number two...
Oh, number two indeed.
Is... Well, I have to take a break. If I don't take a break, I'm going to be able to do it right.
Yeah, if you don't take a break, you know, your head's going to explode. Or, I don't know, maybe somebody's got the rig over there and a little something cooked up in a spoon, right, Rush? Mmm, tasty. Yeah, Marty, you need your coffee. Yeah, that means you can't be a moron or a moron. I mean, a Mormon. No way. Share a nice email with you real quick as we work our way toward the end of the evening. Uh, got a nice one from Janie. She said, I was really touched by your story on April 25th. You have validated so much of what I despise in medicine. Well, I don't know if I feel good about that, but she said, we torture patients. I always tried not to be redundant with my patients. If I saw the doctor do an exam and it was okay, I wouldn't do another. It goes against policy, but why put the patient through what you went through? I'm so sorry you had to experience modern medicine. The sad thing is they're dumbing down nurses and putting the fear of God in them. The fear is lawsuits and all the corporate hell that is a cancer on the U.S. now. We're not allowed to be nurses anymore. It's paperwork, seminars, and various other BS. If the bean counters had their way, one nurse would tend to all the patients in the hospital and then be asked if they could cover the night shift. When the shit hits the fan, it's always the nurse's fault. These corporations set us up for failure, pay us crap, and rake the cash. She said, I left my last job of 8 years due to the BS. I was threatened to be fired for not sucking up to asshole parents that complained about me. I'm a nurse, not a maid. I've been a nurse since 1994. I'm still unemployed. I always thought I was safe and could get a job anywhere. My experience is vast. Floor, PICU, SICU, PACU, CICU, pediatric and adult. When I look for a job now, I have to take these creepy tests that assess your pro-corporateness. I've even tried these strip mall surgical centers, but unfortunately they're either HCA or some other corporation. I'm really considering waitressing. I'm ashamed of what has become of healthcare. Well, I didn't know this. She says the podcast had a lot of dead space in it, and I didn't catch what happened with the Rocephin or whatever antibiotics they put you on. Nothing. Nothing happened. I tolerated it fine. The only problem was they didn't chart it. She said, I don't agree with the prophylactic antibiotics. I don't think it was prophylactic in that instance because my white count was up around 20,000 or something like that. Those are the most abused drugs, antibiotics, she says. The constant testing and retesting is ridiculous. You need to listen to Dr. Agnes if she diagnosed you correctly. You can refuse testing. You don't have to do everything they tell you. Many of those tests were redundant. I know you were in a vulnerable position, and that breaks my heart, but use your and Agnes's head. I'm sorry if I'm spelling your name wrong. You're doing fine. If you feel something's wrong, it is. We are bred to be ridiculous. I'm amazed at how they're dumbing down nurses. I'm not sure why I thought healthcare would be exempt from the corporate nonsense. She apologizes for the novel that she says the novel that she wrote. It wasn't a novel. It was a wonderful email. Thank you, Jamie. Thank you very kindly. And with that, it's time to get out of here. And yes, Michael. Flush did use a logic similar to, I cannot bring you back to life, therefore I have not killed you. He did that. That's what the right wing hears and eats up with a spoon every day. Thank you to all of you who tune in, share your time, who share your contributions to help keep this going. We did not reach April's goal, so Scott in Sweden, you're safe again. But thank you for the effort you did make. It is profoundly appreciated. Profound thanks always go out to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas Gene and Susan, our blogger Texas Betsy, my head writer David in Tennessee, John Fox for all you do with the website and everything else, and, of course, Ben Birch at White Rose Society, whiterosesociety.org. And, of course, thanks go out to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, stoptheache.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn.
Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and it is cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Over a minute past the hour. Welcome to the middle of the week. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice, headonradionetwork.com. A listener-supported enterprise of some, we're in our eighth year now. Ninth, if you count the, if you count the exercise in terrestrial broadcasting where this was all born. But anyway, no matter how you slice it, we've been here for a while, and I'm proud of it, as should you be as well, because you are the ones who have kept this going all this time. And, you know, when it's all said and done, or written, or whatever, or carved in stone, let it be noted that Head On with Bob Kincaid went on the air before Air America and has long outlasted it. And it has outlasted Air America on your determination that it do so. Pretty cool, huh? Yeah, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. If you want to jump in and help, it would certainly be appreciated. We finished April in the hole. We finished March in the hole. I think we finished February in the hole. I can't remember that far back. But the hole's deep, too. So headonradionetwork.com and the PayPal button there. And I'm told by our buddy Randy that it looks like the widget may have stopped working. I don't know if you're out there, John Fox, but the widget is suddenly not keeping up with contributions. And don't know why. So there's that. But no, thank you. Thank you for your contributions that do keep all of this going. It's the only way. Simply put, it is the only way. Because I just don't think we're going to be running across any deep liberal pockets anytime soon. Because I don't run in those circles. And apparently, most progressive broadcasters don't run in those circles, because there's not a lot of funding by the deep pockets folks. It's all a matter of standing with one's hand out, hoping to keep it going, and it is an honor beyond expression that y'all have seen fit to keep this going for as long as you have. A program note, I'm kind of doing this every night, remind me if I forget tomorrow, but no show Friday, no show Monday, no show Tuesday, no show Wednesday. 4 days. And that's because I'm on the road. We're going to be taking the human rights struggle against the Appalachian apocalypse of mountaintop removal. We're going to be taking that on the road to Boston, Massachusetts, and Charlotte, North Carolina. So that's where I'll be. I'll be coming home, I guess. I think I get on a plane like 5, 6 o'clock Wednesday night, and fly thitherward on an old barnstormer, twin engine nightmare, won't get up over 5,000 feet, you know, just high enough to be dangerous, but not high enough to be comfortable. And return from Charlotte to Charleston Wednesday night. So no show Friday, no show. Well, I mean, there'll be shows. What you will probably hear are reruns of this week. Friday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and then regular schedule Thursday, regular scheduled program on Friday.
I really, I'm looking forward to this opportunity to speak simply because things on the ground are changing so quickly with regard to mountaintop removal, and they are not changing for the better. They are changing for the worse. People here are getting sicker. There is more poison going into the ground, into the water, into the air. And I get a sense that we are approaching a tipping point here. And those of us who have chosen to be in this struggle and refuse to simply walk away and say, do as you will to us, many of us are redoubling our efforts. The AKE campaign, the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign, is on the ground in Washington, D.C., even as I speak. I could have been gone either last week or this week, but health issues precluded that. And so my good friend and colleague, Bo Webb,